Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to another Arsblog Arscast on arsblog.com, brought to you in association with SavileRogue.com. That's right, a brand new sponsor for the Arscast. From here on, it's the people that bring you those beautiful cashmere football scarves, which we gave away a few of before Christmas, you might remember. I've got one. It's the best scarf I ever got. I promise you, I'm not just saying that. And I'm sure we will have some scarves to give away in Arscasts to come. Now, on this week's show, we have got a blog chat with the man from East Lower, in which we discuss, in light of what's happened this week and Liverpool being taken over, we discuss the possibility of something like that happening at Arsenal and maybe some of the effects that might have on the club. As well as that, I'll be talking to Nigel Phillips from the Arsenal Supporters Trust, who can give us some information about exactly how things are structured at Arsenal, what somebody who wants to take over the club might have to do, and what fans can do if they want to get involved with that Supporters Trust. So that's coming up a little bit later on as well. We have got, as always, the man in the bar with another player history, Arsene Wenger. Hawkins will be here, and we'll have your reaction and your emails on that same subject about the possibility of Arsenal being taken over by a wealthy investor. So what's been happening since we spoke last? Well, last Saturday we played against Middlesbrough and drew 1-1. In the circumstances, a good point. It was a game, though, that we could very much have done with taking the 3 points from, given the fact that Liverpool dropped points at home to Everton earlier that day. But the fact that we were reduced to 10 men, and they scored a penalty. It showed great character to come back and draw 1-1. And it's something the team is becoming very, very good at. This coming back and giving teams a lead and then dragging it back off them. How good will we be when we stop giving teams the lead? We're being too nice to these people. We need to go in front and stay in front. And as much as I love equalisers and last-minute winners and things, I really, really love 4-0s and 5-0s and 6-1s and 7-2s and things like that. May not be as exciting, but, you know, it's quite enjoyable, really. Midweek was very, very quiet because of the internationals that were on. Luckily, I think all of our players came through unscathed, despite Henry playing 90 minutes. But as I said in the blog, 90 minutes might not do him any harm. Get some power back into those legs. Cesc, who we thought needed a rest when we saw him last week at Middlesbrough, he only played 20 minutes during the week for Spain against England, so he should be fit and raring to go on Sunday against Wigan. There haven't been really any stories breaking at all. It's been very quiet in terms of Arsenal news, so there's not really a huge amount left to say about what happened last week. The biggest story, football-wise, was, of course, the takeover of Liverpool. Now, they've been trying to get somebody to take over the club and invest in the club for quite some time. For at least 18 months now, there have been stories about people putting money into the club. This week, they finally sold the club to George Gillett and Tom Hicks, two Americans, who came over and called Liverpool a franchise and the Liverpool Reds. Now we have a situation where three of the top four clubs in England are owned by foreigners, so to speak. Two American people, or consortia, and of course Abramovich at Chelsea. The obvious next target for a wealthy investor, somebody who wants to get involved in Premiership football, is Arsenal. This week on the blog chat, I talked to the man from eastlower.co.uk to find out what he thinks of something like that happening to Arsenal and the effects that it might have on the club and the team, in particular, let's say, Arsene Wenger, who's very much enjoys the hands-off approach that the current Arsenal board take, and what it might mean in terms of selling players such as Thierry Henry. So without further ado, here is this week's blog chat. Okay, this week on the blog chat, we welcome back the man from East Lower. Hello to you, sir.
Hello there.
Okay, it's been a while since we've spoken, and something I want to talk to you about, and you know, we try and keep things on the Arscast quite lighthearted, but I think something, well, we try, but I think something that we should look at is the fact now, after what's happened with Liverpool during the week, we've got three of the top four teams now owned by either Americans or a Russian, in the case of Chelsea. Liverpool have spent about 18 months trying to sell the club to anybody that would have it. To the guy Kraft, then there was Steve Morgan, then there was the Thai president, then there was the Dubai people, and now he sold it to the two Americans. What do you make of it?
Well, firstly, off on a slight tangent, it really kind of annoys me that they keep going on about how they haven't had the same kind of money to spend as Arsenal. I mean, I just don't think that can be true. I mean, Arsenal have spent, over the last 10 years, a pretty average figure. And, I think Liverpool have spent a lot of money, but they've just spent it badly. So I don't accept that argument to start with. But as for whether Arsenal are going to be taken over, it does, I have to say, fill me with dread. But whether that's just me being, a little Englander, or whether there's more to it, I'm not sure. I don't like the idea of it. Mainly because the way it seems to be going is that they're seeing it as purely a business thing, quite clearly. Football is more than that. And you just can't guarantee that in 5 years' time, the new Liverpool owners won't turn around and sell it to someone else who might not look after it. They might look after it themselves. I mean, at least with people like Dean and Hillwood, they might not be absolutely perfect, but they're Arsenal through and through. And that's what I like about Arsenal. It's, it is the traditional club. So I hope it doesn't happen. I think it might, though, in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you'll find is people who will say, well, look, United now have been taken over, and they, despite the fact that they were saddled allegedly with a mountain of debt, don't seem to have any problem spending money. Liverpool now have got these guys who are, I presume, are going to inject, a certain amount of money into the transfer market. As well as that, you've got Chelsea inflating the price of players all over the place. Arsenal, I don't think when they started this project to build the new stadium, in order to lift the club to a new level in terms of the income that they could generate, could possibly have foreseen the fact that, three of their biggest rivals would then, get taken over by these consortia. And really, it has changed. It has changed the playing field. I would be like, I would be like you, in that it would be something that I really, really do not want to see. And I hope that it doesn't happen. But what we have, I suppose, at Arsenal is a club, that has a significant debt, and were somebody to come on board and offer to wipe that out, then I suppose that they have to look at it.
Well, you say that, but then like you said before, the Glazers came in and they saddled, they bought it by landing the debt on the club. So they're massively in debt, and yet they spent 18 million on Carrick, and they've got money to burn by all accounts. So what I find slightly puzzling is that we were told all along that the whole point of moving is that we're going to have loads of cash to spend, and that might well be the case, but it doesn't seem to be happening now. And whether that's just because Wenger doesn't like spending, or whether there really is no money, I'd be slightly concerned if there's no money. I mean, surely we've got some of the biggest match day incomes in Europe, as they tell us, and in which case we shouldn't be having too many problems with money.
Yeah, I think the whole area of whether there's transfer money to spend or not is a bit up in the air. I remember Amy Lawrence saying on another Icecast a while back that it might be a situation that we had to sell somebody if we wanted to buy somebody in January of this year. But at the same time, we spent close on 20 million last January. We spent money during the summer as well. So, and you read quotes from Peter Hillwood and from Edelman saying that, look, there is money there for the manager to spend, but he hasn't come to us and said, I want to spend the money. He's obviously gone down the road of youth. One of the worries, I suppose, in terms of a takeover would be the fact that I think what Arsene likes about Arsenal is that everything is left to him in terms of the footballing side of things. And that goes from, we have the stories of him designing the training facility. Exactly. Everything, down to the finest detail from the dressing rooms to the team, to the youth system is run by him without interference from a board who, with great credit to them, have sat back and allowed him to do what he wanted, with the club. Another owner, despite what they might say,
when they come in, because I can remember Abramovich saying when he started at Chelsea, no, I'm not going to have anything to do with the football side of things. I want to appoint people who know more about the game than I do. This is not going to be something that I'm going to get involved in. And obviously we've had last summer Shevchenko certainly, and possibly Balak, two transfers that you know were the chairman's transfers and not the managers. There is that danger, isn't there, that if somebody came in...
I think so. Yeah, I'd be worried about that. I mean, I think there are lots of dangers. That is a massive one. It's clearly beginning to happen a bit at Chelsea, if you believe what you read anyway. I mean, there are lots of people with interest in team selection by all accounts, so you wouldn't want that to happen. I don't know. I think I like the status quo, not the band. I don't like the status quo.
Sure.
But I like... The way things are now, and I would worry a lot, because at least you know what you get with Hillwood and with Edelman, and you would never know. And you know, they can say all they like about respecting the history of the club and X, Y, Z and blah blah blah, but you can't guarantee that's what they're going to do, because ultimately all of these people, it's not a coincidence it's happened all in the last year or two. It is because they see it as a way to make money. There's, you know, they're not coming in as some philanthropic people to put hundreds of millions of dollars or pounds into the club for no reason. So it is a money-making venture for them. That's what they see it as.
In that regard, then, whereas somebody like, for example, Thierry Henry, under Arsene Wenger and under the current system, you know, was unsellable. He is an asset to the team. Somebody who runs the club as a business is going to see him, okay, somebody who's a great player, but also somebody who could bring in £40 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think Thierry Henry, he's 30 in August. I think he's sellable. I mean, let's be frank. I think it's got to that stage in his career where I think they could sell him. I'm not saying they would or they'd even want to, but it's not like he's 25 anymore. So it could happen. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that Arsenal don't, the directors don't run Arsenal as a business, because of course they do, and they're probably doing a really good job. So I think it could be quite an interesting summer with regards to Thierry Henry. I think he'll stay personally, but I don't think he's unsellable, put it that way.
Okay, but I mean, what I was trying to say was that, you know, certainly 2-3 years ago, the notion of selling him would just have been ridiculous. It just would not have happened.
No, true, but the notion of selling Ashley Cole 2 or 3 years ago was ridiculous too. So, you know, a year is a long time, isn't it? And I agree with you, though. I mean, I think I think the interesting thing is when he was injured this time, the team did really well without him. And so whilst he's absolutely crucial to us still, I think he's not so crucial as he would have been maybe a year or two ago.
Okay, no,
but I'm not advocating selling him. I think he's a fantastic player, don't get me wrong. But I don't think it's beyond the realm of the possibility that they'd consider something this coming summer.
I wouldn't see it happening this summer, I don't think.
No.
I don't think. No, there's still...
But you've got to agree that it's more like, you know, compared to last summer when, you know, perhaps not last summer because it was up in the air, but the one before that, you know, you could see it more likely to happen this year.
Well,
than
absolutely.
A couple of years ago.
Well, I mean, what happened sort of last summer, you know, when you lose Pires, Bergkamp, Cole, Campbell, you can't lose Henry on top of that. You just can't.
No.
Whereas I'm not sure we've got anybody that could really take his place, to be fair. That's the only thing, unless the money that you get from Henry is going to be reinvested in somebody young, like Torres, for example, that kind of a player. Then I don't see the benefit of selling him at all.
No, and also he's one of the big marketing money makers now, isn't he? Along with sort of, you know, the Tiger Woods and other people of this world, he's one of the big boys in that regard.
Yeah.
So I think he's worth a lot to Arsenal, not just on the pitch. Obviously, he's you know, we don't need to keep talking about how good a footballer is, but I think off the pitch he's worth a hell of a lot as well. So, I mean, I do agree. I think it would be a massive surprise if anything happened this summer, but I wouldn't. It would be less of a surprise than it would have been, let's say, 2 years ago.
Sure. Okay. Leaving that aside and trying to come back to things slightly more lighthearted.
Uh-huh.
On Sunday we play Wigan, which is generally quite a
Terry Wigan. Yeah.
Terry Wigan. Okay, the last time we played them was the final day of last season, the last ever game at Highbury, and they gave us a bit of a scare, didn't they? But I don't think they're the same team this season as they were.
No, they something seems to have happened, doesn't it? I'm not sure what it is, but whether it's second season syndrome, whatever that might be. I don't know. They're having a massive rut there. They're sort of 8 or 9 games without winning. So you would hope that we'll put them to the sword. But you know, it all depends on who comes back from, you know, more knackered than when they left this week. And you know, I hate international week, especially when it's friendlies like this. So I hope so. You'd hope so, wouldn't you? You'd put your money on it, Doc.
Okay. Quick word on Theo Walcott. How do you see? Obviously, he came in, started very well, started the season very well and was quite productive. But, you know, what do you think could sort of kickstart his season?
I don't think he needs a rest at all. I just think people need to give him a break. I mean, sometimes we expect too much of our players. He's 17, still only 17, you know. There aren't very many other players, with the exception of Fabregas, who clearly is superhuman. But there aren't many other players of that age who'd be in the first team, full stop. So I think he can be quite pleased with his progress. I think we can. He's been good at times, but maybe we expect too much of him, and we should just, just support him at the moment. If he's still putting in sort of hot and cold performances when he's 21, 22, then maybe you start questioning him. But, I mean, he's 17. I just think he needs a break.
I'll go along with that. Okay, well, thank you very much for taking the time.
You are welcome.
We shall talk to you again soon, sir.
Yeah, will do, hope so.
All right, cheers. Thank you very much to the man from East Lower for his blog chatting skills. He'll be back on another Arscast very soon, and we'll have another blog chat on next week's Arscast. A little bit later on, I'll be talking to Nigel Phillips from the Arsenal Supporters Trust, and he'll give us a bit more information about what that particular group does, about how things stand at Arsenal, and maybe what somebody like Sheikh Mohammed, if they want to come in and buy the club, what would they have to do to get control of Arsenal. That's coming a little bit later on. Now, on Thursday morning, I asked you to email your thoughts on whether or not Arsenal should resist a takeover. Would a takeover be good for us? Would we be remiss in not taking a big investment given the fact the club has a large debt, having built the new stadium? So some of your reactions and some of the emails that you sent in, I'll read those out now. And there were quite a wide mix of viewpoints on this particular one. I think we should hold on to tradition and stay completely home-owned, says Jude in Nigeria. Toby says we should fight them on the pitch. We should fight them on the all-seater and rather comfortable and spacious terraces. We should fight them in the tunnel and around the grove. We should never sell up. Kevin says, I think we should sell up to a takeover. If Roman had have bought Arsenal, think how much better we would be. If you gave Wenger a checkbook that big, we would be truly invincible. However, even if we did have loads of money, I don't think Arsene would buy stupid like Chelsea. I think we need the money to back us up so we don't disappear outside the top four. Richard in Hemel Hempstead says, I'd be utterly against it. These takeovers are not good for football, no matter what the fans of clubs affected will try and tell you. Phil Lloyd says, there will be a business cycle movement and the wealth will move on. It will take some time, but stability and prudence in the boardroom is boring but reassuring. You can say that the Arsenal board are what we deserve and are steeped in tradition, but with a modern relevance and a bravery illustrated by their vision. They are the board we deserve. Michael says, why is everyone panicking about teams being sold off or bought? The only owner who falls into the category of being a patron is Roman Abramovich at Chelsea. He's the only one who appears to be enough of a fan to run his club as a hobby and lose money on it. The rest are businessmen who have bought very expensive assets and intend to make these assets work for them. The hysteria over these big money owners coming in is such complete crap. Rob Cheshire says, I would prefer us to remain family-owned, but I suspect that sooner or later we'll be sold. Either way, I don't think things will change dramatically. Tim Barrett said, if DIC want to invest some money in the club, I'm sure we'll gratefully receive it, as long as control of the club is not surrendered. John Wilson says, for as long as Arsene Wenger remains our manager, we'll be able to compete with clubs with billionaire owners. He'll always find and develop the most promising youngsters, and in return, those youngsters know that at Arsenal, though the money may not be as good as at Chelsea or even Villa, they will get the best development and will be given their chance to shine when the time is right. Angus says, what I want to know is why all these people doing business with English clubs are foreign. Where are all the generous, rich English businessmen? And does it make a difference where they're from? Simon says, These investors aren't crazy, though, unlike the Russian. He's talking about the Liverpool ones, and will spend carefully. He says as long as Arsenal can compete on a revenue level with United and Arsenal, they won't get left behind. However, Arsenal have two disadvantages. Firstly, our grant has cost nigh on £400 million, whereas Liverpool's will be less than half that. And second, we got tied into some very long-term sponsorship deals that won't look too clever in a couple of years' time. Paul Edmund says, yes, we could do with the investment if it means we have to compete to keep our rightful place in the top two. But on the downside, we'll get the Arabs who didn't get Liverpool, so that's like being second best to the cunting Scousers. Fair enough. DBK says, it will inevitably happen that the Gunners are taken over by a rich company or individual. The issue is, when it happens, and it definitely will, seems very sure, what will Arsene do? Are we more than Arsene's club, or can we stand firm without the special abilities that he brings? Richard B. says, I would much rather have a club run by lifelong Arsenal fans who know the tradition and history of the club and who are interested in the long-term future of the club. Hatchett says, it's the fact that the Hillwoods and David Dean's sole motivation is not the pursuit of profit, but to secure the future of the club and move us into the next phase of our history. Somebody who asks not to be named because of connections with Arsenal says that, I can't really see that many positives now that I think about it, except that if Wenger wants to buy somebody, he can. The club is in no financial danger. We aren't going to have the Grove repossessed and hauled away down Holloway Road. Players aren't going to leave because we can't pay their wages. I think that Arsenal is currently undervalued. It wouldn't take much for someone to stump up the £450 million, then wait a short while and sell it for £600 or £700 million to some clueless Russian dolt who has more radioactivity in him than Marie Curie. Dave in the US says, if you want the best team in the world, you can't limit yourself in any way. I think Arsene Wenger knows this, and that's why we have the best team in the world, even though there are only two players that play with any regularity from England on the squad. Fact of the matter is that I see national limitations as being somewhat xenophobic. We have Derek and Brandt with more or less the same comment here, saying that I find it a bit ironic that Arsenal is viewed negatively as a foreign club from a player perspective, in that there's not enough English players, but no one looks negatively on the other three of the big four for being owned and essentially run by foreigners, which is a good point. And finally, Neil says, Sheikh Mohammed would be an ideal owner in that he's loaded, will continue to be loaded for the foreseeable future, and is unlikely to radically change anything about the club. He'd be better than any of the Americans whose only interest is in making money. I'd see him as not unlike a lot of footy directors in the past, there to provide financial support only and keep him out of footballing matters. I doubt he'd want to run things in the same hands-on way as Roman, so I suppose it will depend on who he appointed to the board. So there you go. Thank you for all your emails today. Sorry if I didn't get a chance to read out yours, but there were just so many of them. A real cross-section of opinion there. It's something that could prove very divisive. I think there are people that look on the club being taken over as what would be maybe the last straw for them in terms of the way the game has gone. Other people will say, look, you don't have any choice. You either embrace what's happening at the moment or you get left behind. It's one of those things that's going to cause debate up and down the country. And as more clubs, and I'm sure more Premiership clubs, are going to fall out of English ownership, I think this is going to become a bigger and bigger issue. Anyway, moving away from that slightly, just for the time being, as somebody who always has a strong opinion on things, here's Arsene Wenger Hawkins.
Hello. Wasn't it funny to see Liverpool being bought by Americans this week? Do you remember how much they laughed at Man United when they got bought by that bloke who looks like a troll? Come on, la, they do that there, don't they? Just because their new owners don't look like ginger portions doesn't make them any less big fat wankers, though. What does a man who owns the ice hockey team know about football? Nothing, that's what. He might know something about hockey, which is, let's face it, a girl's game played by girls. Just because you put it on ice and let people thump each other doesn't mean it's not a fucking girl's game. What next? Will we have a baseball team owner? Perhaps Donald Rumsfeld will become the new owner of Bolton One.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
There is a pack of cunts owned by a complete cunt. It's rather fitting. I'm not worried about Arsenal though. In 1985 I tried to buy Arsenal. I had a tremendous package sorted out. The club would be rich and able to buy new players, and there would have been a top-class manager put in place who would have won us lots of trophies, at least 3 European Cups. I saw into the future. So I met with Peter Hillwood, and we had lunch in the Ivy. What a very interesting man he was. Full of great stories and always ready to fill your glass with some more 1958 Chateau Lafite. "Have another drink, Arsene Wenger Hawkins," he'd say. "Don't mind if I do, Mr. Hillwood," I'd reply. "Oh, call me Lionel. I like to be called Lionel. Bottoms up, Lionel." I had a great time. Too great a time. That Hillwood man got me so drunk I signed over half my money for one share in the club. He bought himself a new set of golf clubs, and I spent the rest of the evening in Stringfellows getting lap dances on the lap I haven't felt for so many years. So don't worry. Arsenal is run by canny people. If the sheikhs and the American sports billionaires come knocking, old Lionel will bring them out, get the cunts completely pissed, then pickpocket the fuckers. Oh yes.
Thank you, Arsene Wenger Hawkins. He will be back with more madcap mechanical voice action next week on the Arscast, brought to you by SavileRogue.com. Now then, continuing the theme of takeover and after what's happened with Liverpool, United, Chelsea, Villa, West Ham, etc., etc. A lot of people are afraid of foreign owners and of somebody coming into Arsenal and buying the club. I spoke yesterday to Nigel Phillips from the Arsenal Supporters Trust, and his information is very interesting. He tells us what somebody would actually need to do to take over Arsenal. If they wanted to come in and buy the club, who would they need to buy shares from? Where would they get those shares? How many shares would they need? And whether or not it's a realistic possibility, even if you are Sheikh Mohammed. So here's another blog chat with Nigel Phillips from the Arsenal Supporters Trust. Now I'm talking to Nigel Phillips from the Arsenal Supporters Trust. Hi, Nigel.
Hi.
Okay, we're discussing the possibility of a takeover of Arsenal, given the fact that we now have a situation where 3 of the top 4 clubs in England are foreign owned, and 3, well, 2 in particular, obviously Liverpool and Manchester United, 2 clubs with great history and in the game in England. People are going to be concerned that the obvious target, the next obvious target, is Arsenal. What is the lay of the land at the moment, and what would somebody have to do? For example, Sheikh Mohammed, what would he have to do if he wanted to take over Arsenal now?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that Arsenal are clearly in a very different situation to Liverpool, Manchester United and Chelsea in terms of the takeover, in the fact that at Liverpool and Chelsea, the buyer just had to deal with one person. So they dealt with Ken Bates and his group of people, his investors from overseas and wherever. And at Liverpool, they've got control by doing a deal with David Moores, who owns just over 50% of the club. At Arsenal, we've got 3 shareholders who collectively own 55% of Arsenal. So that's Danny Fisman with 25%, Lady Nina Bracewell-Smith, who owns 16%, and David Dean, who owns just under 15%. So if someone actually wanted to take control of Arsenal, they are going to have to get two or three different parties on board at the same time to say, come on, sell your shares to me. Now, everyone knows that ITV own 10% of Arsenal, and those shares are available for anyone who's got the right sort of money. And ITV wants a premium to the current market price. So if someone's out there who's got close to £40 million, they could come and buy 10% of Arsenal tomorrow. Does that give them any control or any influence at Arsenal whatsoever? No, it doesn't. And it probably doesn't even give them a board position, because ITV don't have a board director. They have a board observer. So they're a non-voting shareholder. So for £40 million, you get 10%. You don't get any dividends in Arsenal. They haven't paid a dividend since the 1974-75 season. So we've got to really think, what are those medium-term objectives of the three major shareholders, and what are their motives? Why are they holding? Would they sell? Would they sell at any price? So that's the big unknown. Now, everyone's got their own views on Danny, Lady Nina, and David Dean, but are they all moving in the same direction? Could they all be pushed? And that's the big question. That's what we don't know.
I think, and I'm not sure whether this is something you can confirm or deny, but certainly there's been talk that one of those three would not be averse to selling their share in Arsenal.
Well, I think, they're all coming from slightly different positions, how they've come into Arsenal. Danny clearly is a very, very wealthy individual, seriously wealthy, and his personal stake in Arsenal doesn't make a material difference to his wealth or not. So if he were to sell his 25% in Arsenal, would it change his life? Not one jot. And I see him as the sort of David Moores of Arsenal, in the fact he's been coming to the ground for over 50 years. He's a big supporter. He's never taken a penny out of the club. He gets paid as a non-executive director, so he gets £15,000 a year for his expenses. So I don't think it would make any difference to him. And he's done all the work. They've got the ground sorted out. David Dean, as we know, has been there for when he came in 1983. He was the majority shareholder. He got up to 42% at one stage. And then he brought Danny in as a partner in 1991. And then Danny has progressively bought David Dean's shares from him. David Dean is a big wheeler and dealer in all levels of football, massive, massive Arsenal fan, and hugely close to Arsene Wenger. But my suspicion is that most of David's wealth, and that is substantial, is tied up in Arsenal. Would it make a difference to him? Would his influence in Arsenal change if he weren't owning 15% as he did at the moment? I can't answer that for you.
Yeah.
Lady Nina with 16%. She is a, by marriage, she is a descendant of the Bracewell-Smith family, obviously. She's only 55, and the shares are in her sole name, having transferred them to her sole name from her husband, Sir Charles, who is the grandson of Bracewell-Smith. Now, Arsenal brought her onto the board when that share transfer went through from their joint names into her sole name. And once again, I can't tell you what her medium or long-term aims are. What would it cost to buy Arsenal? Manchester United were bought for just under £800 million, and they had no debt with them. So all that £790 million, which was paid by Glazier, has gone to previous shareholders in Manchester United. Roman Abramovich bought Chelsea for £140 million, of which £60 million went for the equity, or the shares, which were owned by Ken Bates and his cronies. The other £80 million took care of their long-term debt they had in place, which was for stadium refinancing, what have you. So that was £140 million there. For Liverpool, the figures they're talking about, they're £175 million for the shares, and then they're taking care of another sort of £50 million of the existing debt. What we don't know is what is actually being pledged for genuine new investment in the club in terms of building the ground and Rafa's transfer fees. We're talking about maybe 200, 250 to get the overall deal to 450, 475. If you wanted to buy every Arsenal share in issue, currently those shares are worth £310 million. And then there's another £300 million of debt on the club at the moment, which is related to the stadium financing and also the redevelopment of Highbury. So you could say Manchester United was sold for £800 million. Someone to get control of Arsenal now would at least have to be £600 million and probably substantially more, because if you're looking to gain control of something, then you've clearly got to pay a premium from the current market price. So, I mean, how is the Arsenal business model different from the Manchester United business model? Now the new stadium is working and the revenue streams are very different to what they were before. I know this sounds all very businessy, but unless you're Roman Abramovich and you just want a trophy asset, everyone else coming into football, whether they be the Icelanders at West Ham or the US guys at Manchester United or Lerner at Villa or even the Dubai International Capital, they're all looking at it as some sort of investment. They're wanting something back out of it. They're not just throwing the money in there thinking it's a great idea. So the situation with Arsenal, as far as I can see, is it's a pretty full price at the moment. And whilst the debt's going to get repaid from the earnings from the new stadium, one would expect as that debt goes down, then the equity price goes up. So that sort of overall club value of the £600 million I talk at the moment, is I think it's a huge figure. And do you think that can go to £800 million or a billion, or are we getting towards the top of where the football tree is? If someone were to manage to get control, then they would be taking, I assume they would want to take some revenue out of Arsenal, which if it weren't coming out of Arsenal, it would be invested back into Arsenal. So how could a shareholder genuinely say, I think this is a good idea to sell my shares now, knowing that someone's going to be taking something out of the club where at the moment it's going to be invested into it? Because the thing people forget about Manchester United, and their figures came out a couple of weeks ago and it shows they make 30 million profit, that's marvellous. But what they don't show is there's 700 million of debt out there, which in the last 12 months cost 60 million to service, which is double the profit that the club are making. So yes, they might be left and right hand type of transactions, Glazier has borrowed money to buy Manchester United, and it's the profits from Manchester United which are paying off that Glazier incurs debt. And the only way he can clear that is by eventually selling the club for, let's say, 850 or 900 million, clearing off the debt, and he'll take 100 million out of it.
So you think that's what his plan is? You know, obviously,
absolutely.
Long term, he's not there to build a United side. He's not there to do anything other than get a return on the investment he's already made.
I've not heard any warm words from him in terms of, we love the club, we love the history, we love the franchise, we love all that type of stuff. He's pure and simple out to make the money. And I think the way he's running it will prove that's exactly what he is doing. Also, the Arab investors who were looking at Liverpool, that seven-page internal note which got circulated to, I think it was the BBC, Mahir Bose, was saying, well, we have a seven-year exit strategy, so we're going to buy the club, we're going to build the new stadium, we're going to up the revenues, and then in 7 or 8 years' time, we've got something which they've bought for 450 could be worth 650. So they were looking at the exit strategy even before they came in.
Okay, so it's really a case that even if Sheikh Mohammed was to come along and plough a big, huge amount of money into Arsenal, you know, they're looking long-term at then selling it off again. So what you'll find is that, you know, clubs are being, you know, turned over and traded every 7-10 years, you know, once people are making their investments back.
I think that scenario is wholly realistic if the values keep on going. Now, I think we've all got our views that the pips are being squeezed so much out of the supporters in terms of ticket prices. The corporate money is clearly there. The TV money deals they're getting for the next 3 years are phenomenal. But can those levels of growth be projected for the next 5 years? It's your personal view about how big the FA Premier League can become.
Okay, Nigel, tell me quickly about the Arsenal Supporters Trust, you know, about what you do, what the aims are, and how people can get more information.
Well, the principal aim of the Supporters Trust is not to take over the club, obviously. It's not to change the way it's run. We think it's been run well. It is to build an infrastructure now for the potential event when something is happening, which we're not saying we're going to disagree with, because we're not anti-change per se, but we want the supporters to be a voice in that process. We want the potential buyers to have to sit down with representatives of the supporters and say, this is what our plans are for your club. They are purely custodians of the club. And I mean, I think a lot of people think that we own it emotionally, morally, etc., but we don't economically own it.
Okay,
and what the Supporters Trust has been doing is, it's open to everyone. It costs £2 a month, £24 a year to be a member. We've got members who currently speak for over £5 million worth of Arsenal shares. So it's small. It's about 1.5% of the shareholders. But what we really want to do is get to the stage where we could say that the Supporters Trust represents 10% of Arsenal. And why is 10% important? The reason it's important is what Malcolm Glazer had to do, once he bought his first lot of shares and he got to over 50% of Manchester United, he's then in control. When he gets to 75% ownership, he's in total control. He can make every decision and pass it himself. But what all these guys, and this is the same for Randy Lerner at Villa, what they want to do is get 90% control of the club, and then they can delist it, they can take it private, and they can do exactly what they want to do. Now, when I say we want the Supporters Trust to try and aim for that 10%, there aren't a lot of shares we can actually go for. Unless we've got David Dean to join or something like that, then we are going to about 1,200 different shareholders of Arsenal. There's only 1,600 shareholders. And going to those sort of 1,200 people and saying, join the Supporters Trust. You don't have to transfer your shares. What we're wanting to do is say, we are representative or an umbrella organisation for those people. And all these people own 1, 2, 4 shares or whatever. Yep. So that's on one side with existing shareholders. Only half our members are shareholders. The other half are regular supporters who are contributing subscription money. And when we have enough money, we buy a share in the club. So the Supporters Trust at the moment owns 3 shares in Arsenal. Well, 3 shares, big deal, £15,000. But that's the way it's actually going. You may have seen that we badgered the club to issue what we determined was the orphan share. There was one share which had been authorised but unissued, and that at the last club AGM in October was voted on and was transferred across to the Supporters Trust. And that shows the sort of level of dialogue we are having in the club. They don't think we're a rogue element trying to destabilise anything. But still, there's a long, long way to go in what we're trying to do.
Okay, there's a website, isn't it? It's arsenaltrust.org.
Arsenaltrust.org. There are only 62,000 shares in issue, so it's roughly one share per person at the new stadium. But they're very tightly held. The directors and their close family own about 67% of Arsenal. ITV own 10% of Arsenal. There's a lot of shares owned in nominee names, so you don't actually know who the beneficiary owners are. But there are professional investors who have been buying 1%, 3% when they become available on the basis of they think it's a good investment, they think something's going to happen. The other thing we're talking to the club about is setting up some sort of share save scheme. And the idea behind the share save scheme is that supporters can contribute whatever they want to on a monthly basis. So this isn't subscriptions to run the Supporters Trust. This is their money going into a savings account, which collectively, when there's enough, goes to buy shares. So whoever contributes whatever, they would then own a proportion of the share. The difficulty is that each share is currently trading at about £5,000. So if anyone's got £5,000, they want to buy a share, get in contact with the Supporters Trust and we can get you a share in Arsenal. But if you wanted to save £10 a month or £25 a month, when we get this share save scheme up and running, the idea is that collectively we can move together a lot faster than we're doing on an individual basis.
Okay, brilliant. Nigel, we have to leave it there because that's so much information. Thanks a million for taking the time to talk to me today.
Excellent. And if anyone wants to get in touch, then please do look at the website and we'll be delighted to hear from you.
Thank you very much to Nigel Phillips from the Arsenal Supporters Trust for taking the time to talk to me yesterday. Hopefully that will put people's minds at ease a little bit. It's not as easy as just coming in, clicking your fingers and buying Arsenal Football Club. Remember, if you want to get involved with the Arsenal Supporters Trust, go to www.arsenaltrust.org and you'll find all the information on there, including contact details, how to join up and more information about what exactly it is that they do. Now, after all that serious information, it's time to make things a little bit more lighthearted. Here is the man in the bar with another player history.
Ah, there you are again. What? No. I stop, no. I did not dye my hair. I just woke up one morning and there it was, all black again. It was lovely. The missus thinks it's great altogether, so she does. And speaking of people with funny hair, this week I'm talking to you about Willie Young. How many people thought Willie was a tremendously good name for him because he played for Tottenham Hotspurs and Willie is another name for a penis? But that all changed in 1977 when he joined Arsenal for the massive fee of £80,000. Enormous money back then it was. Back then for that kind of money you could buy a mansion, two Ferraris, an island and a small planet. And we got Willie Young, but you never mind. Anyway, he was a big ginger centre half and he was from Scotland. You know my main problem with Scotland is all the people that think they can do an impression of Sean Connery and they can't. They think if they go, yes, money, penny, they can sound like Sean Connery. Well, you don't. You just sound like a fucking cunt trying to sound like Sean Connery. So shut your fucking hole. But I digress. We'll come back to Willie Young and the flame-haired wonder. His finest moment was in the 1980 Cup Final against West Ham, which we lost 1-0, sadly. Fucking Trevor Brook and the cunt. That particular day, West Ham were playing a young lad who was only 11 years old called Paul Allen, who was Clive Allen's cousin, I think he was, which obviously makes him a wanker. Runs in the family, you see. But anyway, there we were, 1-0 down, going up for the winner, trying to find the winner, and he went clean through on goal. He was on his own, about to cover himself in glory to make the game safe, and in steamed Willie Young from behind and fucking kicked the legs out from underneath him, sent him about 8 feet up in the air, and stopped him scoring the goal. Yellow card for Willie. I think after that they invented the professional foul, the red card for the professional foul. Certainly the greatest foul I've ever seen in my entire life. So well done to you, Willie Young. You'll always be remembered for that. After Arsenal, he went and joined Nottingham Forest, and then he played for Norwich, and then he retired. Nowadays, Willie runs a sanctuary for ginger people on the Orkney Islands, the only place that'll have them.
The man in the bar will be back with another player history next week, of course. And now then, that's just about it for this week's Arscast. The final thing, as always, is our bet of the week, thanks to BlueSquare.com. That's www.bluesq.com. If you don't have an account with them yet, if you click on the banner on the right-hand side of the Arsblog homepage, sign up and make the bet of the week. And every so often, when you make a bet or two, Arsblog gets a couple of quid. Helps pay for the server. So if you could do that, that would be brilliant. This week, Simon Wolf says, despite being in a good run of form, Arsenal still keep conceding the first goal at Ashburton Grove. This weekend, against Wigan, you can back the Gunners to concede the first goal, but come back to win the game at 8-1. Considering the way our season's gone, that really is not a bad bet. So www.bluesq.com. That's it for another Arscast. Another one next week. Enjoy the weekend and talk to you then. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.